If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison.
Back at you with season three.
Bow, 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 bow.
You keep reappropriating that sound, Ben.
I should not be doing that. Yeah. We will not put the drop in there.
Yeah. Not going to happen. I'm editing this episode, and I will not be using that drop there.
Okay. It's sacrosanct. It's only used to mention Greatest Gen Con 2017.
Very true.
I have a couple of housekeeping things, but I was hoping we could open some Star Trek cards. Let me just burn through them.
Okay.
Number one, I am drinking alcohol.
Oh, good for you.
Number two, I think we'll have results from our contest to announce. Probably not this week, but next week.
Yeah.
And lastly, I have had the VHS tape of my childhood Star Trek movies digitized. And the quality is very bad, but I think we'll try to do something next week where we play some clips from it and talk about what a nerdy kid I was. Because I watched it and I was like, I took a little bit of a lunch hour at work to try and watch this, and it was like totally destroyifying my sense of self-worth to to relive this.
You really had a moment.
Yeah. So it should be on brand for this podcast for me to embarrass myself like that in public.
It's about time we get back to embarrassing ourselves on this show. It's been way too long.
Last episode may have qualified as us embarrassing ourselves.
What's fun is that episode hasn't come out yet, so we have no idea what sort of shitstorm it caused.
Yeah, that's true. Well, do you want to open some cards?
Sure. Are you asking me if I want to, or are we going to?
We could cross streams.
Let's do it. Right. I love that package opening sound.
Yeah, it's real nice on the Shure SM7B microphone. Come on, Jaeger.
Give me a Jaeger.
My first card is for Lower Decks. Did you got this card, right?
I believe I did, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a cool one. It's like eyes on the palms of hands, which doesn't, as far as I can remember, have anything to do with the episode in question.
Yeah, if there's anything our podcast is about, it's about hair on the palms of hands.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
I got a counter at Farpoint, which we've gotten. That's a repeat.
Yeah.
Samaritan Snare, Eyeball on the Enterprise and Fishhook, we've also already gotten.
Right. This is from episode 11001001, and it is the Enterprise flying as fast as it can toward Minuet, which is probably what it would be doing if I was in command.
What part of Minuet?
The, like, Chestal area.
Yeah. Want to go motorboat some Minuet? I've got Hero Worship, which I think is another one that we already have in the pile, right? It's got it's got Picard up on a pedestal and a small child looking up at him.
Yeah, boy, I think it's Data on the pedestal, right?
Yeah, that would be troubling if it were Captain Picard.
I have one for a Rob Bowman episode, Brothers. Looks like it's like two Datas, or I guess it's Data and Lore, and they are either going to kiss or fight.
I got The First Duty, which is another repeat. I got a pack full of repeats, dude. And then I got Masterpiece Society as the last one, an episode I don't remember at all. It's some sort of a chunk of stellar fragment heading for a colony of genetically engineered humans. And then the Enterprise offering to evacuate them. That sounds like a storyline we've seen time and time again.
I feel like that happens every season.
Yeah. Yeah, some core is ejected. It's flying towards a planet. The Enterprise is on the scene.
I have one for Loud as a Whisper, the Ginger Jesus episode.
I love Ginger Jesus.
This is a real weird one. It's like a hand making the peace sign, but they've superimposed a screaming mouth over that peace sign. And then a shot of the Enterprise flying in the background. Kind of a crazy one. And my last one is Emergence, which I think is for that episode where they're all on the train going to some city, and it's like some computer system that's like becoming intelligent within the ship. They have to holodeck adventure to confront it.
Boy, it's becoming clear just how often a computer malfunction is a major storyline on this show.
Yeah, if it's not a computer malfunction, it might be a brain malfunction.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Well, that offers us a nice segue into today's episode.
Yeah.
Today's episode, of course, being Season 3, Episode 1, Evolution. And Ben, as we do most of the time when we begin a new season, might be a good idea to talk about some of the differences that we noticed right away as this new season begins.
Yeah.
What did you notice?
Well, we open with a very awesome exterior shot of the ship in front of like a big red giant star. I don't know if it's like vastly better than the ship shots that we've seen so far, but it does like really set a tone that like this has got some cool ship shots in it. And
like I feel like the show's automatic deposit has just received more funding.
Yeah.
And after Shades of Grey, they're ready to spend money again.
Right. And I think that holds like even throughout the episode and just in terms of just the cinematography in general, like it seemed better lit, more interesting blocking and more interesting choices with the camera work and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of dirty shots, right?
Yeah. And a major upgrade on the uniforms.
Right. This is a pretty significant change visually. What you have here is a change from spandex to a wool gabardine blend.
Yeah. It's like suit fabric.
Yeah. And it looks less shiny than the spandex was. It's a more matte finish of a uniform.
Yeah.
It looks thicker, like demonstrably thicker and not as form-fitting.
Right.
I felt like they did a thing in this episode right away, which was a nod to this. Hmm. And one of the first scenes we see is Wes relieving someone at the con.
Yeah.
And the person getting out of the chair is wearing the old uniform and leaving the bridge. And everyone else on the bridge is wearing the new uniform.
Everybody with no speaking part it got passed over for new uniform duty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like the one weird thing is like, I guess I don't really know like what it costs to tailor something like one of these uniforms, but like a really fancy suit, which I would imagine is on a similar level of complication, you know, can be like $5,000-$10,000 if you buy it in London. And, you know, I think that the like kind of workmanship that you bring to bear on a show like this, you're not sending away to some factory in China to have these made. You're having them made by highly skilled workers. So it seems like they had it in the budget to get like the main cast recostumed minus Wesley and Troy, and that's it.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
I have a number That's the cost of the new uniforms. Would you like to take a guess as to how much one of these new uniforms costs?
I don't know if I... I'm going to guess 10. I'm going to guess 10 grand.
We're going to go under on that. $3,000.
Wow.
Per costume.
Yeah.
Seems like pretty good value.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't want to put every extra in a $3,000 suit.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think they gave Troy a new uniform. Do you think so?
No, it's the same. And Wesley is the same, even though they claim he's grown 2 inches since last season.
Yeah, they're still pouring him into that gray jumper.
Yeah. The opening interior shot of this is the camera panning over a bunch of like snacks and science crap on a table to find a sleeping Wesley Crusher.
The boy.
With a galaxy of pimples on his face.
Oof.
It's one of those things where I'm sure Will Wheaton wishes they hadn't done the HD upgrade on this episode.
This is so HD unkind.
Yeah. I mean, like, in the wide angles, like, it just doesn't show up that badly, but this camera is, like, inches from his face, and he is, his complexion does not hold up.
Yeah, I think they set up a fill, like, that's totally perpendicular to his cheek, and so it only serves to emphasize the height of the acne off of the rest of his face. Like, yeah. It casts a shadow over the rest of his cheek.
Yeah, it's like they set the bump map to 100%.
I'm speaking as someone who still gets acne as a 30-year-old, so, like, I'm not speaking disparagingly of, like, to make fun of another guy. Like, I totally feel this, and it made me feel bad.
Yeah.
We're just pointing it out. We're not making fun. It's a real Back to the Future beginning, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Like Wes is sort of the Marty McFly character who's overslept his alarm and he's late for class.
Riker phones him up and
forget to set your alarm, Wesley.
I guess there's no punishment for being super late to work on this episode. he gets up to the bridge and they've got a science man, Dr. Paul Stubbs, who is there to do a science experiment on this red giant star. There is some kind of stellar matter that's coming off of this star, and then there's a little neutron star in the distance that this matter is like in kind of a descending orbit of, and it like spirals around it. And I guess this neutron star will build up enough of this stuff every 200 years to cause it to explode and then start the cycle over again. So this is apparently like a great opportunity to get some kind of data, and that's why they're here. And this professor is like, he's like the perfect, I'm going to call him space schlumpy.
Like, sure.
He's got absent-minded professor clothes, but updated for the modern 24th century gentleman.
It's a real dumpy tweed.
He's got a lot of rumple in his in his clothing.
Yeah,
and is a pretty great character, I thought.
Yeah, he really plays a bastard well.
Yeah, like we get to know him because Picard comes out of his ready room and he's like, "All right, let's do some science." And the professor like starts big dogging him right off the bat.
I have been inspecting the egg for the last 20 years. You may lay it when ready.
And so we're like, oh, God, fuck off. Like, do you really need to cop this fucking attitude right now? Like, you're getting to do your damn science.
Every scientist on this show up until now has been someone that the Federation has sent to a faraway chunk of rock and just sort of exiled. This is one of the rare scientists that hasn't been given that treatment, and he's a total dick.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you need to look around you and see what is happening to your kind, because they're being shipped out left and right, and yeah. and you're about 5 years away from being dirty old man level scientist. So check yourself before you riggedy wreck yourself, sir.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that
uniform.
So what they're going to do, the science plan, is they have this thing called the Egg, which is a probe, like a specialized probe that's about the size of a shuttle pod. They're going to send it into the like vicinity of this explosion and gather data on this neutron star. And it's going to happen in 18 hours. Like it's coming up.
The Egg looks like a prop that was from that episode with Seymour Castle, right?
It really like, does, yeah.
It looks like the same deal. It's a bunch of bars welded together. It's like a structure that protects an inner structure.
Like, hey, we got a lot of tubular aluminum left over from that Seymour Castle episode. This is the prop department guy.
The prop department guy is definitely from Wisconsin, it sounds like.
And so they get ready to launch the Egg, and they are hit with a big banger.
Yeah, totally big banger.
Mm-hmm.
And it throws Stubbs to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Like he is rolling all over the bridge. And it's like one of those things where everything they try doesn't work, you know, like hit the stabilizer, we don't have the stabilizer. Hit the shields, we don't have the shields. You know, reboot the engine. Sorry, we can't do that. And so they're just shaking around for like a good 15 or 20 seconds. And they finally get control of the ship back. And the doctor is kind of hurt, so they got to send him to sick bay. And guess who's in sick bay, Adam?
A very, very 90s hair Beverly Crusher.
Yeah, she's like, yo, it's the 90s now. I am rocking this hairstyle.
Well, I mean, to be clear, we're going to get letters about this. It's 1989, September 1989 on this air date. However, like, this is a quintessentially 90s haircut that she's rocking.
Yeah, she knows.
Like, it's like a, it's like the office lady from Dilbert. Like, it's a triangle configuration. I mean, we're getting a little Star Trek hair cast here.
Yeah.
But I think for good reason. It is, it's pretty epic.
Yeah. Unlike the office lady from Dilbert, she isn't there as a female punching bag for a gross men's rights advocate.
Sure, sure. While we're on haircast for a second, can I talk a little bit about Wes's hair?
Yeah, it's really bad, right?
It's like he saw what they were doing to Frakes,
yeah.
And he's like, I want to get in that chair right after Frakes, and I want exactly the Frakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they were to stand side by side, they'd have the same haircut.
Yeah, but it's weird because it like I feel like it looks okay on a grown man, but somehow on Wes it looks like hair plugs. Like it looks like fake.
It looks like he leaned over a hand dryer in a bathroom and just kind of blew it up.
Oh, you think he did the Flobee? This is like prime Flobee era.
He gets some nice verticality on the hair.
Yeah.
Like in a really impressive way. And it's something that is proportional to Riker's face and body. Like it just sort of blends in and works for Riker as a character, but it does not work for poor Wes.
Yeah, he needs to go back to the
supercuts.
He needs to go back to Pee-wee hair big time.
What's the significance? I don't know.
Yeah, Pee-wee hair was actually working a lot better for him.
Never been said before, but
yeah. So Beverly's back, and she explains that she was at the academy for a year teaching.
Yeah, teaching at Starfleet Medical or something. I kind of wished that they'd done something to explain. Like, I wish that they'd sent Pulaski off. Like, you know, Pulaski had a tough road to hoe not being Beverly Crusher, and didn't start her tenure on the Enterprise in the best way by being super racist against Data. But I think we can both agree by the end of season two has really won us over as like a totally valid, excellent Doctor character.
And I completely agree. I like Pulaski and I am sad that she's not on the show anymore. Like I'm totally pro Pulaski.
Yeah, but they didn't send her off in any way, you know? Like in
she saved Riker's life.
Right. In Pulaski's first episode, they explain where Dr. Crusher is.
Yeah.
In this episode, it's like she might as well not exist. It's very Pulaski erasing.
So I read that the story with Pulaski's character is there was a pretty sizable letter-writing campaign to get her off the show.
Really? That's like
which
the reverse Jaeger.
Which is sort of like Jaeger. A reverse Jaeger. Yeah, exactly. And it once again speaks to sort of the awesome power of conjuring any sort of letter writing campaign.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of a powerful and dangerous thing to do that.
Well, I think that we've had a little discussion about that recently with regard to tweeting at the Star Trek Room account. And a lot of people have tweeted on our behalf that we should be writers on the new series.
A lot of people are also saying that we've been Jaegering.
Yeah.
By doing that, which is totally correct.
It's a good point. It's a point that we are forced to take seriously. I mean, also the silence has just been really quite deafening.
The silence has been enough to make me want to pivot that whole effort into what I think we would be better at anyway, mm-hmm. which is the post show conversation show,
right?
That we're definitely going to do after this new Star Trek series launches.
Yeah, I think we should absolutely do that. I mean, I think that it would be nice to be an officially sanctioned post show, but I don't think that we should let that be the determining factor.
We don't want to be talking about how we're out of the pocket of Big Rod and then like somehow talk our way into the pocket of Big Rod.
Yeah.
I don't want that at all. I want to stay out of the pocket.
Works contrary to everything we stand for, which is a totally independent assessment of Trek.
I want to be able to make all the jokes, both dick and fart.
Are there any other kinds? Probably not, but we'll never know.
You can't do that when you're inside the pocket.
Yeah. Depending on which pocket, it's either dick or fart. You know, if it's front pocket, it's dick. If it's back pocket, it's fart.
If it's tiny pocket, like the Imodium pocket, that's Rhea. That's Rhea joke. We do not as yet have a title for this show, so if you have any ideas.
Yeah, send them in.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurseth the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
Anyway, goodbye, Dr. Pulaski. Hello again, Dr. Crusher.
I miss Dr. Crusher.
Well, it's nice to be together again.
I wound up loving Dr. Pulaski, but I love the shit out of some Dr. Crusher.
I don't know. Her overbearing mom vibes creep me out a little bit.
There's a lot of that in this episode, so I don't fully blame you. But when the professor is down in sickbay,
the professor is recovering from his banger,
mm-hmm. and kind of plants this seed in the doctor's head that Wes is developing weird because his mom is on the ship with him, and. I think we both know that Wes is developing weird for other reasons also, but, you know, maybe he has a point. It really gets under her skin. So, like, while the ship is completely in dire straits and getting fucked up left and right, Crusher goes up to the ready room and takes 15 of the captain's time to talk about her son.
Yeah, really, way to make it all about her. The one person she shouldn't be asking about how he's developing is Captain Picard.
I see no evidence that there is a problem.
The line that made me laugh the loudest was she's kind of like talking about how she feels like she's really grown apart from Wesley and doesn't even know certain major things about him. She asks Picard, has he ever been in love? And his reply is just, What are we to take away from that?
He mentions that he's strong, like his father.
He's got the strength of his father, Rudy. He's honest and trusting, Theo.
Both resistant and accepting.
And he does like to eat the pudding with his girlfriend, AOC.
He gives the chocolate to his girlfriends.
They dip the finger and they lick the pudding off the finger, AOC.
Yeah, that's how that scene happens.
Yeah, we don't even need to pull clips from that because that's basically a photograph of of what happened in that scene. So Wesley wanders down to engineering, and LaForge is like frantically running around the Shimoda corner trying to figure out what's going on with the computer. And he's like looking at a magnified section of the data core or something like that. And there's just like a big hole blown right out of the middle of it. And the camera like pushes it on Wesley, and he like comes just short of reaching his finger up into his collar and going, "Gee!"
It's when your whole body goes, "Oh boy."
Real like child acting school rep right there. Like lowercase a acting for sure.
Yeah.
So he does what anyone would do who may be responsible for impending doom to the ship.
Impending doom to the flagship of the Starfleet.
Yeah.
With 1,000 souls aboard.
He tells no one about his potential responsibility.
Yeah. Like
you gotta give it to Wes. He's great at keeping secrets.
He kinda chaotic bros it. Like, he doesn't want to tell anybody what's going on until he knows for a fact that he's right about his theory. But
yeah,
this is a lot of goofing around that he does. Like, he goes back to his science room. He sets a bunch of traps in 10 forward and gets caught by Guinan. He promises her that he's going to tell somebody if his theory bears out. But like, that never satisfied anybody when Chaotic Bro tried to pull it, right?
Yeah, he's doing everything besides tell an authority figure what's happened.
Yeah, and like the Chaotic Bro, like he didn't have any responsibility for there being poopy on the ship.
Right.
Wesley did this.
Yeah.
Yep. He put the poopy on the ship.
Or else it gets the hose again. I said put the poopy on the fucking ship.
Now put the poopy in the basket.
Would you fuck me, Captain? I'd fuck me.
Oh, man. Coming out of the blocks in season 3 hard, Ben.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
So eventually he does confirm. What has happened is that he had some medical nanites that he was doing a school science experiment on, and they got out of Six Bay, and they are tearing the ship apart, Lisa. and he goes about revealing this to the senior staff by having his mom do it.
Ugh, yeah, this is so emasculating to watch.
It really is.
Yeah, Beverly basically gives the senior staff the rundown on what the nanites are. And then, like, she ends her comments by going, like, and then someone released them onto the ship. And then, like, whips her head around at Wes, who is, like, staring out the window, shaking his head.
Yeah, he's doing all but a Riker lean. And
yeah.
And so this breaks out in a debate, which is the nanites are microscopic robots.
Remember, if it doesn't say micromachines, it's not the real thing.
Doing something that they're not designed to do, which is multiplying and harvesting computer core parts for resources. And they're like, well, this could be like the start of a civilization. And if it is, if they're then they're potentially intelligent. And if they're potentially intelligent, that's sort of like core mission shit. We're gonna like try and figure out a way to meet new life and new civilization. And Dr. Stubbs, the rumpled professor, is like, no, fuck that. Like, I'm trying to do my science experiment here. And this is a science experiment run amok. You need to shut it down, get rid of the nanites in the computer, and let's do what we come to do.
Yeah, he's like, your computer has fleas. Like, let's gas them out of there and get on with our business.
Let's put one of those tents around the ship and I'll go on like a vacation to Palm Springs for a weekend. And when we come back, it'll be nice and clean.
We get a new set here.
Yeah.
Which I think is fun, which is what I think we're led to believe is the computer core.
Yeah.
It's a place where the crew can actually interact with the main part of the computer.
It's a cool set, and we get kind of a fun reveal of Stubbs like walking along a catwalk and like down a ladder into it where Data and Wes and maybe like Geordi are identifying where in the system these nanites have gone.
Right.
And they're trying to encourage the nanites to go somewhere else by giving little gamma pulses. And Stubbs is like,
have you considered a high-level charge?
That'll just kill them. And they're like, yeah, well, that's not what we're doing. I mean, obviously that would work. And he's like, I know. And he puts his gun sideways and like blah, blah, blahs at him. Like he pulls some real gangster shit right here.
Yeah, does he use a gamma dustbuster?
It's configured more like a pistol. It doesn't look like a dustbuster. It's like he has a 9 in his belt, and he just walks in and starts blasting away.
Yeah.
And Data has to like grab his wrist and stop him from shooting.
Yeah, and evidently Stubbs ends up murdering like a lot of these little guys, and they are not happy about it. They begin to drop bangers around the ship in a pretty aggro way.
Yeah, this gets the nanites working overtime, and Riker and Picard are having a little man-to-man in the ready room, and they start smelling something, and they go out on the bridge, and the air is dense with smoke.
You smell a change. What?
Riker, like, runs over to the computer and like, figures out that there's
nitrogen oxide, toxic levels
being pumped into the bridge. Like, the nanites are not just doing bangers. They're actively fighting back.
Right, and they seem to be able to listen in on conversations because, like, I feel like any time Stubbs is brought up in a conversation, they drop a little banger or something bad happens on board the ship. They seem to understand their communication.
Stubbs gets confined to quarters for being a big fat prick, and what he wants to do in his quarters is...
Just think about baseball.
He's not doing it with anyone and imagining baseball games. He's just skipping the sex part and thinking of baseball.
Yeah, like he has this whole thing with Wesley where he says, like, I love baseball, even though like nobody knows anything about it anymore. And he's like, I've seen all the best plays. And Wesley's like, oh, cool, you do holodeck. And he's like, no, I do it with my imagination. And it's like somebody going like, I love jerking off, but I never watch porn. And it's like...
Like Sting would say.
Yeah. And I feel like Riker would have just thrown up if he'd been in the room when this conversation went down.
You disgust me, sir.
Yeah. Like even worse than that guy that said that he didn't have any interest in reproduction. I think Riker's more passionate about beating off than...
Sure.
...than reproduction.
I am the cutest of all. There are...
So, I mean, shit really comes to a head, and Picard finally, like, realizes that they may just have to commit genocide on these computer fleas.
Right.
And so they, like, ready the system to do that, to, like, flood the computer with this radiation that would kill everything.
They tiptoe right up to it, and then Data kind of makes a breakthrough. He's typing away on the science station, and some ones and zeros come back and start flashing on the screen, and he does that, like, you know, like push back from the desk in awe, in the awe of somebody who's made a real eureka moment.
Mm-hmm.
He has established communication.
Well, I guess it's not a surprise that the nanites would use binary as their way of communication, but I think it's weird that they're able to flash whatever they're saying to Data, like, they flash it on and off.
Yeah. Somebody's gotta translate that binary to, like, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, bold and underline wasn't something that was in their power, but flashing on and off is. That was fun.
Yeah.
So Data comes up with this great idea in a very Data kind of way. He wishes to sacrifice his body in all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. And he's like, look, you know what might be easier... An easier way to communicate with these nanites is if I let them go inside me and puppet me around. Like, wouldn't it be great if you could talk to them through me? And for some reason, like, everyone is cool with this except for Worf. Like, Worf, again, is the only sensible person on the bridge. And he's like, do you think it's a bad idea to let them wear Data, like, some sort of robot outfit? Like, basically the most powerful thing on this ship besides the ship itself.
Do you think it's a bad idea for them to let them make a skin suit out of Data?
Right.
Would you fuck me? Yeah. I'd fuck me.
And to a man, everyone's like, shut up, Worf. So they go into the computer core and they shoot the nanites into Data. And sure as shit, like, they drive Data around and speak through his mouth.
Yeah.
And unsurprisingly, he's a little pissed at Stubbs.
Right. And yet, like, they are able to reach a diplomatic agreement very quickly. And it's man, like, if this is the kind of conversation that happened after the Gulf of Tonkin incident, you know, like, it's like everybody is like working in such good faith the entire time. Like, Data doesn't hide, or like nanite Data doesn't hide that they are super pissed at the professor, but ultimately they're willing to look past the fact that he committed nanite genocide. And it's like, wow, how nice of them.
It's so fucked up. Like, Data gets up out of his seat and approaches Stubbs. No one gets in between them. Yeah. No one gets in between them because Data would rip the head off of anyone who did. That situation is so dangerous.
Yeah, seriously.
That was an insane choice to make.
But it worked.
Yeah, it did. And it did. Picard lawyers the nanites into peace.
And they even, like, got a planet set aside for them?
Yeah, they kind of made out great on the deal, didn't they?
Yeah, they make the best deals. They make amazing deals that really show the Chinese who's boss.
Nothing wrong in my tiny robot department. Great tiny robot.
I have totally normal-sized hands for a very tiny robot.
Trump sounds a little JFK to me. We will go to the planets.
Believe me, we are made of star stuff. The most incredible star stuff.
This episode has all the impressions.
All of our really solidly C-minus impressions. So the last scene of the episode is Beverly goes to knock back a couple of drinks and eat a couple of jelly beans in 10 forward. Do you notice her plate of, like, Turkish delights and jelly beans?
In the future, that gets to be your dinner.
Yeah, she had like a Fernet Branca and jelly beans for dinner.
God.
And
her tum is going to be really upset after that.
Yeah, that's not going to be a fun hangover. But kind of talking motherhood with Guinan, and Guinan tells her about one of her offspring that she had to whip into shape over hundreds of years, and then Wesley comes into 10 forward with a cute blonde girl and goes off and sits down with all of the Enterprise teens.
Is that scene canonical Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, by the way? Because all the kids at that table are wearing different colored neon clothes. Yeah. Like, good Lord.
That's a good call.
They made a production decision not to light them differently to emphasize their presence. They just costume them in the loudest way possible.
Yeah. This definitely has a slide whistle, which is the Doctor, you know, going like,
what do you know about this girl?
Wait a second, who is she? Who's her mother?
Right.
Like, does she come from a good family?
Huh, yeah, and that was the button on the ep. Interesting first episode for a season.
Yeah, in good Star Trek tradition. This is a weird first episode, but I liked it.
Yeah, I think I did too. I mean, it was, God, anything is good after Shades of Grey.
Yeah, but the writing was good. The motivations of all the characters was, pretty interesting. I think almost everybody in the main cast had an interesting role to play. There's all this stuff on the theme of being a young person with a lot of potential, and mm-hmm. and the, you know, Dr. Stubbs has lived a life as somebody like that and has some interesting, like, experience to relate to Wesley on that subject. Overall, I thought pretty solid.
Yeah, and I mean, not to get too mission log about this, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention, like, one of the reasons that the show pivots when season three begins is because Michael Piller's brought on as executive producer. And when he came in, he laid down the law on a couple of things. And one of the things he laid down was every episode has to show some sort of character growth, and every episode has to be about something.
Yeah.
Like, those were the edicts. And, like, they're laughably thin when right. even saying them out loud. Like, oh, really? Right. Like, the show's got to be about something?
Oh, do you think so, Doctor?
Thanks. Like, that's helpful.
That's like what you get told in, like, your first screenwriting class in film school.
Right.
Like,
right. And this episode was very emblematic of the former, just the character growth element of this.
Right.
Wesley did a bad thing. Wesley learned that he needs to tell people when he makes a mistake.
Right.
Yeah, I dug it. Good, interesting start to a season, but it gives me hope for future episodes based on this, totally. Like the strength of this one.
Absolutely.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find a season 3 Drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did. Drunk Shimoda Award is an award we give to characters who act in a way that seems incongruous or silly in the way that Jim Shimoda does in episode 2 of the series. An award we give out every episode because we thought Jim Shimoda was such a great, funny guy. So my Drunk Shimoda for this episode is the crew members that were on the bridge when they started getting gassed by the nanites. Because Riker and Picard are in the ready room, and there's, like, nobody from the main bridge crew on the bridge when they're in there. They come out, and there's, like, half a dozen people working the bridge, you know? There's somebody at con, there's somebody at ops, there's somebody at tactical, there's a couple people on the science stations in the back, and they are just standing there going about their business, coughing as they are being poisonously gassed. And it takes Riker running over to the computer to figure out what the fuck is going on and like changing the environmental settings to get rid of the poison gas. Like, guys, you can save your lives. You don't have to be at ops doing nothing while you get poison gassed. And, like, it's also pretty clear that they've been suffering through this for a while. They didn't radio anybody up and say, like, hey, just so anybody knows, bridge is flooded with poisonous gas.
Yeah, they're really ready to ride this thing out.
Yeah, so crazy. Yeah. So that's my Drunk Shimoda.
Yeah, that's troubling. My Shimoda, I think, has got to go to Beverly, who chooses the time in the episode where the ship is at the most danger just to have a heart-to-heart with the captain about how Wes is doing.
Yeah.
Bad timing, bad form, bad everything. And Picard actually allows it.
Yeah.
Like, he humors her.
Yeah. She's like, you got 5? And he's like, yeah, I got 5.
Yeah, I mean, bangers are getting dropped all over the ship, and at any moment, I feel like people could die, but yeah. Sure.
While I agree with you, I do think that this sort of speaks to something about Picard's captaining style,
mm-hmm.
which is that, like, the ship gets in some fucked up situations on a fairly regular basis, and, like, he is nothing if not cool under pressure,
mm-hmm.
and he is down to do some personal shit with a crew member to, like, hash some shit out despite a potentially critical situation. And I don't think that it was, like, entirely clear how critical it was yet. So I think that was just Picard being like, yeah, like, of course there's a critical or potentially critical situation. That doesn't mean I don't have time in the day to talk to my chief medical officer, you know?
I don't know. Is he the right person to ask how Wes is doing, though, also?
No, I think Riker was the person to ask.
Yeah, I think so, too, because when they were doling out responsibilities for overseeing him when Beverly left the ship, I don't think Picard got a job.
Right.
Like, everyone sort of volunteered for duties, and Picard was like, great, make it so.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What are we watching for the next episode?
Next episode is Season 3, Episode 2, The Ensigns of Command. I keep thinking I'm going to do, say, Season 2. It's like when the year changes over and you sign your first rent check and you put, you know, 2015 on when it's 2016.
This is exactly like that.
Yeah. Season 3, Episode 2, The Ensigns of Command. Data races against time to save a human colony that's been marked for death by aliens. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do not remember this episode at all. It sounds like Data is going to engage in some sort of limb for hostage exchange.
This is probably in my top 10.
Whoa!
I like this episode a lot. There's like a crazy type of alien, and there's a lot of like Picard lawyering, and there's a lot of great like Data character development with, like, you know, him kind of coming into his own as somebody who's comfortable as a commander. You know, like he doesn't do a lot of management in seasons 1 and 2. In this episode, he has to like convince people to listen to him as a leader, and I'm excited to watch it.
I don't know, man. It sounds pretty talky. I can't believe that an episode that is in your personal top 10 is one that I don't remember at all.
I think you'll remember it the second you start seeing it. I think these descriptions kind of suck.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Here. I'll
Not
I'll
a let, great description.
Yeah, really kind of a shameful description. Sad. Here's what I'll do for you, Adam. I'll do some Picasby to try and jog your memory.
You see, Theo, when the Enterprise is trying to save this human colony, a alien race called the Sheliak are coming in to wipe them out, you see. Rudy and the Sheliak look like garbage bag people, you see.
Ben, oddly enough, that totally jogged my memory.
Yes!
I do remember the Sheliak, and I do remember their garbage bag costumes.
Yeah.
Like, they actually hail them, and the bridge of the Sheliak ship is just people covered in garbage bags and some really hard lighting.
That's the thing. There's a cool alien threat, and I think the episode is interesting on a lot of levels. So I will not veto.
Yeah, fuck this episode. I'm going to veto it.
Fuck you. What, are you serious? You're just mad about your last veto. Are you seriously vetoing?
Yeah, I kind of want to see what's going to happen here.
I can't allow you to veto this episode because I will have to burn my veto. And then we have an entire episode or an entire season in front of us that... No, I counteract your veto.
But what do you think about that?
You fucked us again, Adam. God damn it. Everybody that hated the vetoes is going to be so happy, though, because...
Oh, man. That felt amazing.
There are Q episodes. There are Loaxana episodes, Adam. I just want you to confront that reality.
Episode one of a season. Fuck yeah. That feels great. I'm draped over my seat like Riker being given command. I feel awesome about this. Look at me.
Look at me, sure. I'm the captain now.
I think only time will tell what kind of catastrophe you have inflicted on all of us today.
Big veto. Incredible veto. The best veto usage.
But you just burned it. All right. Well, so next time we will be watching episode two, The Ensigns of Command.
Yes. Yes, we will. And every episode of season three henceforth.
Well, I don't know why you would want to, but you can follow Adam on Twitter at @cutfortime. And you can follow me at @BenjaminRAHR.
I don't know how this is happening because this episode hasn't gone out yet, but people are unfollowing me in waves, like right now.
If you want to tweet about this travesty of justice, you can use the hashtag #GreatestGen. I'm sure there will be a war room thread over at the Greatest Gen Reddit sub. I'm imagining people on the Maximum Fun Reddit will be lobbying to have Adam taken off of the podcast.
I would understand.
And, you know.
And
you
replaced know. With Beverly Crusher.
Tagging /you/ Jesse Thorne. Trying to convince him to remove you from the podcast.
You're going to replace me with a McElroy. I know
yeah.
it.
Well, this is an episode that really took a stunning left turn right up against the end. We can't forget to thank Dark Materia for the use of his beautiful Picard song as our theme music. And,
If you wish to encourage us in any way, you can support the show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Why would they want to encourage us after that?
I know.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next week with one of the great episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. And also,
if you say so.
This...